So, welcome to Quantum Street. My name is Yael Potter, and today I'm here with Tim Horan, a senior equity research analyst at Oppenheimer. He specializes in data centers, power infrastructure, satellites, and communication. So, Tim, thank you so much for joining the podcast today, and it's great to have you. Of
Thanks for having me.
course. So, I'd like to start, I always start this way with your background story. So, can you run us through where you went to school, how your career progressed, and what ultimately led to your role at Oppenheimer?
Thanks, Yael. I went to Rutgers undergraduate as a civil engineer, and I built buildings and all sorts of infrastructure around the New York State area for almost 6 years. Then I went to Columbia Business School. I thought I was going to become a real estate developer, but I took a few equity research classes, and I found out that this is my passion, that it's an industry where you basically learn new things every day. You're around great people, and you try to ultimately, pick stocks. I like historical fic. I like basically history quite a bit, and economic history and historical fiction. I read a real lot. So I've always tried to look at industries from a long-term view, like where is technology driving a particular industry, a sector? And then obviously I do ultimately try to focus on sectors where I think we're seeing the maximum amount of growth and what are the best companies to own essentially within those sectors. So I've been here at Oppenheimer over 25 years. I've evolved my coverage quite a bit, as you mentioned. I started out doing communications, got into data centers, then cloud, wireless towers, but it's always evolved quite a bit. But the main thing I've always tried to focus on is primarily, do companies have good infrastructure or unique infrastructure, and then can they get more products and services on top of that infrastructure? So I started out, yeah, that's what we've been focused on. But fire away, y'all. I can talk forever.
Yeah, no, I wanted to say I'm actually also super interested in history and economics, and I think that's honestly one of the reasons I started this because I mean, even last year I was learning about, the Industrial Revolution and how it drastically changed life and the economy so much. And I thought, we're in something exactly like this right now, and why not document and talk about it from all these different angles? So I think one of the main reasons that I have you here today is that you get to talk about one of the things that's really driving AI. And so with that, I think it's pretty widely thought about that before this whole AI thing, the power infrastructure and data center industry wasn't as up and coming. I mean, I've only, and my dad certainly has only been focusing on data centers, and I learned what a data center is in the past year. So how has that shift been for you in your career once AI started, especially with surrounding
Yeah,
it?
I mean, just stepping back a little bit, AI is the killer application on top of the internet, on top of the World Wide Web. And I had realized when I started this career that ultimately AI was going to be the killer application on top of cloud, and the future of technology and communications was going to be the internet, and ultimately enabling cloud communications. And it usually takes so if you step back in history. There's only been two. We believe AI is basically one of the only once a century general purpose technologies. The last one was electricity. The one before that was high powered steam engines. After the underlying technology was invented, and in AI's case, it really was the World Wide Web and the internet.
Right.
It usually takes like 30 years before you really see the killer applications and the true impact on society, 30,
Interesting.
35 years. And the World Wide Web was invented in 1989. So we wrote a report 8 years ago saying that we were going to have the Roaring Twenties because AI should basically kick in sometime in the 2020s, and it was going to drive massive productivity improvement. And if you look at the last two general purpose technologies, they completely transformed our society. They transformed how we our transportation systems, our manufacturing systems, it was on and on what they transformed. And the same thing's going to happen here with AI. If you look at like New York City, for example, if it wasn't for electricity, we would not have had the subways in New York. If it wasn't for electricity, we wouldn't really have assembly lines, to enable cars. So we've kind of believed that AI was going to be obviously huge, but it was probably going to drive 100 200 basis points of GDP growth globally
Right.
and massive productivity improvements. And we needed a lot of infrastructure to support that, and the infrastructure has to be rebuilt. Just like with electricity, we had to rebuild all our factories and all our transportation systems. And you're basically seeing the same thing right now. The data centers are needed for AI training, and we need obviously huge amounts of them. We've gone from spending 100, well, the hyperscalers, the big six, seven technology companies 6 years ago were spending $100 billion a year in CapEx. They're now spending $500 billion and basically on their way to spending $1 trillion in CapEx to support this massive demand and growth for AI. And the problem is, we've run out of electricity in a lot of locations, so we're starting to build basically wherever we could find electricity in the United States and globally. And you need to kind of tie that to wherever the fiber networks are. So we are in a temporary shortage right now. We are figuring out ways to use data centers a lot better. We are turning down the data centers in times of peak usage now. If you look at like Northeast, for example, they only have peak usage about 10 times a year. Do they max out any electric power generating capacity? And I think that's going to be the future. The other thing is these data centers are now going to start having to build out their own power plants, and we're definitely definitely starting to see that. But fire away with any more questions, Joe.
Yeah, so on that topic, there have been so many of these companies that are investing so much money in these data centers over the past year. And I think, so I actually was doing this stock pitch like competition a while ago with some of my classmates. And I remember one of my theses was that this company should be great because they're spending so much money and they're investing so much in AI. And I think that that really tells you a lot about how well the company will do long term. But my question to you is, does that necessarily mean that their ROI will justify that? Is that really going to realize? Is that really going to make, are they really going to make that money back in the future relative to how much they're spending on these data centers?
It's a great question. No one really knows the answer to it, right now. But a lot of incumbent companies are very worried if they don't keep up with AI that their business model will get disrupted. If you historically were doing, search, or you're trying to do self-driving cars, or you're trying to do social media, if you don't keep up with having the latest and greatest AI technology, you're probably going to see a startup that kind of comes in and does that for you. But society-wise and company-wise, we need to see some new incremental revenues coming out of AI, and we have to see, the productivity improvements. We think some of the first areas where you're going to see AI really put to use is physical AI. If you look at self-driving cars, that is absolutely, absolutely AI.
Have you been in a Waymo before?
Yeah, I've been in a bunch of them. Yep, and I like them a lot. It's a very good experience, and I think it's the future. I think self-driving trucks, self-driving cars. You're basically seeing drones, become, I think very, very commonplace. Militarily, drones are basically the future of warfare. In many ways, they're the future of kind of security. But yes, we have to see the revenues and we have to see the productivity improvements. Now, there are some major, major areas of productivity improvements. We're starting to see incredible software productivity for basically making software and software generation. We're starting to see amazing productivity improvements with agents. And I think in the future, basically everyone's going to have a couple of agents to help manage their lives and automate it, and an awful lot of things. But we are starting definitely to see the productivity improvements and the new revenue streams that are required to support this infrastructure. But we don't really know what the returns are going to be, that's for sure.
Are you using agents yourself in your work every day? How are you incorporating AI into your
I use it mostly, unfortunately, I don't use it as much as I should. I'm using it mostly to do research and to get new information. I don't use it yet to write reports, or to update my models. It would be nice to have, but My job probably, half of it's going out there getting information, and it's just done a phenomenal job of helping me get that.
So how, as a senior person in this role, I think research is one of the things that we see AI starting to replace. So how do you see like more junior versions of your role being replaced as AI progresses?
People thought when we had the calculators that first came out that we would need less, stock analysts. When Excel spreadsheets came out, we would need stock analysts, less analysts. And then when you were able to use Word and PowerPoints, we would need less analysts. And there's just a lot more things to analyze. Things get a hell of a lot more complicated. I mean, we could temporarily see air pockets throughout the economy in many, many different industries, that's for sure. But there are so many things now that are getting so much more complicated, and there are so many new industries being created that I think we're gonna, need analysts around for a long time, and doing all sorts of different forms of research. But will it be a growth area? Maybe not, because to your point, analyst productivity should go up 30, 40, 50%.
So just to shift a little bit into the market, I know we talked a lot about historical economics and how that informs a lot of our decisions today. So looking back on history, do you see AI as a dangerous bubble in terms of investing in these kinds of companies, or do you really see long-term growth instead of a bubble burst?
I mean, nothing is a straight line. In life, it's always two steps forward, one back. If you look at the last two general purpose technologies, they created incredible economic booms, for a 10 to 15 year period. And then we saw so much productivity improvements that we had basically deflationary depressions after both of them, for a bunch of reasons. Maybe there was a lot of bad investments. Maybe things got overextended. We probably took on too much debt, and we basically had a lot of stranded legacy infrastructure. If you go back to the 1920s, the agricultural industry saw productivity, increase like an order of magnitude. So a lot of the legacy, so we didn't need a lot of the same kind of, farmers that we had, right? And a lot of the same infrastructure that we had. And I think ultimately the same thing will happen here. But we're really only 3 to 4 years into this. I think, if history is any guide, we probably have another 2 to 10 years of economic, solid economic growth and solid productivity improvements. But you can definitely overshoot on the upside with stock markets, and definitely overshoot on the downside. It's a volatile world.
That's so interesting you say that, actually, because I guess I'm short-term thinking right now, but I have been always thinking, this past December, November is when everything was up, and like since then it's just been kind of stagnant and we're, off the rails. But it's really interesting to hear you say that because I never really thought of it lasting that long. So
And it might not. I mean, I'm just kind of talking, what
no, yeah.
from a historical perspective. But I do think, I do think it's driving a lot of new innovation, a lot of new products and services. The question is, can we reset jobs fast enough? Like, if you don't need taxi drivers or truck drivers, in 5 years, can we retrain those people to get, other and new jobs? If not, we are going to have a problem. So we need to be extremely nimble and flexible as an economy and as a society, or else we're going to have economic problems.
I mean, what I've been thinking recently, and you see it everywhere, millions of people are starting these, new AI startups, and it's so easy with these new apps where you can just, start your own app without even knowing how to code. And I just see most of the smartest people starting companies and becoming millionaires because of it. The historically successful jobs, I don't know, in the future how much those are actually going to be valued the same as they used to. So, that's what I've been seeing.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Well, if you look at creating an application, you used to have maybe one project manager that interfaced with the business users or heads of the different businesses. to create the application, and they might have had 10 programmers, historically, working on the project. You're going to go into a world where we probably need one project manager for five programmers, but we probably need a lot more project managers because we're going to have a lot more agents and a lot more applications, a lot more programs. And an awful lot of these things will also be machine to machine. It's just not going to be, human interface. And you're starting to see that in war. I mean, wars now are starting to get fought by robots and by drones. They need constant software programming, updates and constant analyzing of the data and kind of what's going on. Things are moving fast.
Very fast. So famously, we all saw the Artemis 2 launch. I'm sure, considering your specialty, you were probably excited by it. So how do you see this historic launch impacting the future of possibly data centers on the moon? Do you see that as a possibility?
Possibly. I mean, we're definitely going to have some data centers. I don't know if they're going to be economic enough to run in space. They run pretty well down here, on Earth. But I mean, the great thing about Artemis too, I think, this is getting people dreaming about space again and, going back from our near Earth LEO orbits and really traveling a long way. If you, Jeff Bezos was valedictorian of his high school, and his speech was basically the fact that humans needed to colonize other planets because ultimately, we probably will, something will happen to Earth where it's going to be very, very hard for humans to stay here. So, his goal, and I think the goal of, Elon Musk is to colonize Mars and maybe other planets, over the long term, to save humanity. If anything ever happened to Earth, we are in many ways living on a life raft, in the middle of space.
I
So
mean,
I think this is creating.
the sky's the limit. I mean, with what we're doing now.
Yes, exactly. And I think the great thing is we're starting to see a lot of new industries in space. The most important one right now is broadband communications with Starlink. People can get broadband anywhere. But now we're rolling out services where you can do communications directly to cell phones from anywhere in the world as long as you can see a satellite. Space Starlink is looking to put up 30,000 satellites with massive amounts of capacity. And there's all sorts of new use cases coming out. People are talking about putting massive solar panels in space to generate electricity and sending that electricity down using microwaves, the data centers. We're talking about potentially manufacturing all sorts of new products, up in space that you can only do on low gravity. And then, ultimately having, factories on Mars, or sorry, on the moon, so we can shoot things to Mars a lot more. So it's a really, really exciting time. One of the key, innovations has been using reusable rockets from places like SpaceX, where the cost to launch things into space is down like, 90%, and it's probably going to decline another 90%. So that's enabling the data centers in space, manufacturing in space, electric generation in space, and on.
So, I mean, I think space is not something I've particularly been focused on, so it's kind of a new frontier for me. So what do you see as the potential benefits of having a data center on space? What does that give us that having it on Earth might not have?
Well, first, we are going to need data and computation, up in space for sure. Secondly, we are. If you look at data centers in space, theoretically, if you're up in geostationary orbits, you have access to solar 24/7, so you can massively increase utilization of those solar panels. Secondly, we probably it's a little bit easier to cool down the compute, there over time, and then we basically don't have constraints on networking, on power generation, on power distribution. But an awful lot of things have to still be developed to enable that to happen. So it's probably unlikely in the next 3, 4 years, but if we're looking out to, 5 to 10 year period, it's probably fairly likely. But at the end of the day, it's a lot more expensive to do it right now. So we have to get those launch costs, down dramatically. And, potentially we got to start mining, minerals off a moon or other asteroids to kind of, build up these data centers locally.
So back on Earth, looking at data centers, what are two to three metrics you look for in saying, that's a great company. I think I want to invest in that. That's a solid company and I see that doing well. What are a few things that you look for when you
Well, for
evaluate.
data centers in particular, you have to have skilled and experienced management teams because it's very, very difficult to get them built now. There's a long waiting list for getting the right types of equipment to build these things out. It's very difficult to manage the labor. We have massive labor shortages. But then you also have to interface with the local government to get the zoning rights and building rights. You have to interface with the local electric utilities. So you need, it's really complicated. You need a great management team. What we do like a lot, it's very real estate like. So location really, really matters. Are you in locations with relatively low cost power? Do you have a good amount of land? Do you have networking that's kind of nearby?
Yeah, I think
And
Texas
how much
has been
spare?
a
Yeah.
popular place.
And how much spare capacity you have? Like Northern Virginia is a whole cluster. If you have spare land in Northern Virginia, that's very, very, very valuable. The other thing is, we have like companies historically that essentially enable networks and interconnections between all the different customers. Those type of companies have, quite a bit of barriers to entry. But right now, rising tide lifts all boats. We don't have enough space and power. So if companies have the spare capacity, they're usually doing pretty well.
Great. So I know you're busy, so just two more questions, I promise. In your wildest imagination, if you could think of into 10 years, what are some of the craziest advancements you see happening that no one is thinking of right now, in the AI ecosystem that just off the top of your head, if you could
I mean,
predict?
I think the whole virtual reality world is going to come back, and things like holographics will replace video, over time, which is basically 3D video. Virtual reality. I mean, I think all those things are a form of AI. They need a lot of the same infrastructure that we're putting in place. We're going to need, much more robust, infrastructure to enable all that stuff. That's one. I do think actually flying taxis are going to come around.
Really?
Yes,
Okay.
you're starting to see with drones. And I didn't go into it too much with drones, but the big push with drones is to use AI to make them autonomous, where they don't need a pilot. They're self-driving. So this whole concept of self-driving is going to blow people away. I mean, we're going to see self-driving airplanes, but if I can get on a self-driving little air taxi or a little helicopter that's relatively inexpensive,
Right.
I think there is a market for that. And we're starting to see that even with food delivery. There's a company I know over in Ireland, they're private, but they're using drones to deliver food, at a third the price and, a third the time to kind of get there. Yeah, a few examples.
Yeah, I mean, people were even saying, I think my mom was totally scared to take a Waymo. I've been waiting to try it. I think it's so cool. But I mean, I was at a dinner with this woman, and she was saying that the Waymos are actually so much safer than having someone manually drive a car. There was an accident or something, and the Waymo sensed it from like a mile away, and it managed to stop before it was able to ram into the car. So it's interesting because it's something that you would think that you would be scared of, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, maybe in your lifetime, you'll see, some amazing things, but you might not be able, in 50 years, people might not be able to drive cars in cities to eliminate accidents, or they might have to have self-driving on highways
Right.
because, it could be one tenth, basically the amount of accidents. And, the one other thing I didn't touch on is like human lifespan could maybe double, using AI in all sorts of different forms. So, it's very good at, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And finally, if students like me wanted to learn more about power and energy and AI in general, which resources would you recommend that we look at, use, and how can we get more involved?
I think you just got to go out and use it. Although I'm also just a big believer in taking classes on it. Any type of, there's a ton of online courses now. If you can take a few online courses to get the basics and understand as much as you possibly can, and just go out and try building your own applications, I think you'll be basically, well ahead of anybody else. But if you can understand some of the basic technology behind it, it would be very, very helpful. And then just kind of go out and start using it.
Amazing. Well, Tim, it was great to have you here. I'm really grateful that you agreed to do this. It's been really interesting, and I'm so happy that we were able to speak today.
was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot, Yale.